You are Locked On MLB, your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans, and welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We are the number one national daily baseball podcast you can find. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. In this episode, which is being dropped on the 27th day of February, 2020, we have, as a guest, Ryan Finkelstein of Locked On Mets. Guess what we're going to be talking about? This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available on all the platforms where you get podcasts. When you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it really is your team every day. Check out Locked On Mets. Give Ryan some bump right there. You can check out Taylor Blake Ward on Locked On Angels. Check out Gabrielle on Locked On Red Sox. Stacey Gutsuli is Locked On Yankees. Jeff Carr, Locked On Reds. Are you detecting a pattern here? We've got all your teams. We've got them all lined up. So if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at LockedOnMLB_net. On Instagram, LockedOnMLB. I'm your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. All right, we got all that out of the way. Ryan Finkelstein was a guest on our show in the 2019 season, which was an interesting one for the Mets, that's for sure. Well, you're back here. It's spring training, and shall we say it was an interesting spring training and an interesting offseason for the Mets. Welcome back, Ryan.
Thanks for having me on. It absolutely was. When you go into an offseason where you have to do a daily podcast, you're worried about having content every day, and I did not have that problem this offseason.
You were last year, it was like for two straight months, it was, why isn't anyone signing Harper? Why isn't anyone signing Machado? Why isn't anyone signing Keuchel? Why isn't anyone signing some of these other big free agents like Kimbrel? And that was just the conversation for months. This, you've had to do what, two or three daily podcasts just to keep up with the news cycle. Anytime I could I did an evergreen one. Oh, I'm going to do this one and take today off. So all of a sudden you wake up and now Cora's been fired from the Red Sox. Oh my God. So I didn't necessarily think Carlos Beltran was going to have the longest tenure of a Mets manager, but I thought he would manage more than Mike Cubbage.
Yeah, you think he would have at least gotten to 100 days in, but he didn't even get that far.
Yeah, that's all right. So let's address the elephant in the room. The Mets got rid of Mickey Callaway, who found a new home in Anaheim, and they brought back Carlos Beltran to be the new manager. And I think everybody thought Beltran, who obviously had a wonderful career, was probably going to make a really good manager. He always struck me as a really smart player and a player who had, save for one pitch by Adam Wainwright, a big game reputation. And I thought that was certainly a fan service pick, but it wasn't a completely bonkers pick. But we'll never find out how he would do with the Mets.
Yeah, it was setting up for that great narrative where you could have, if everything broke right, had a player get into the Hall of Fame while he was managing that same team. So there was a great storyline to run with. But yeah, this thing just spiraled out of control. I was loud wrong on this one because in the beginning of the scandal and Beltran being implicated, I said, you know, this is going to blow over. This is the Mets. We got Cespedes fighting a boar. There's so many stories. There's no way this one sticks. And I was completely wrong. It really did kind of spiral out of control in like a week there.
Yeah, I really was. I mean, look at the whole this is not going to be Astros podcast. We've already had on guests from Astros, Locked On Astros. So we're not going to turn this into yet another Astros discussion. But so talk to me about your new manager and what you think is going on there.
Well, I will say that the Mets really lucked out because Luis Rojas was such a strong internal candidate. He was actually one of my two favorites when they originally started the search. I wanted Girardi or Rojas. So you have a guy who started at the bottom of this organization, has managed at four levels, and the players who are on this team now were developed by Rojas. So right. I think it's a perfect fit, you know, especially under the circumstances.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of looking at it, especially when you consider that they did miss out. I have to say, I thought for sure the Mets were going to do everything they can to sign Girardi. To me, that was – it just seemed like a no-brainer, and then to have him go to a rival. But to it, there is something to be said about the manager being someone who is someone that the players know and who helped develop them. I mean, that's – that seems like a good move, and obviously comes from a great baseball family. This, and so what is the mood amongst Met fans about him? Do they look at him as a decent sort of reset, or is there still a little buzz about the missing out on Girardi and swinging and missing on Beltran?
Well, I would say that, you know, your biggest diehard fans that are following the organization that knew who this guy was are very happy. And you also saw a lot of player support right when they made this decision. A lot of players coming out and talking about how much they love Luis Rojas. So I think that kind of helped ease the transition. I'm sure there is still a lot of Mets fans who wanted that big name of Carlos Beltran and are upset about it. But I think Rojas was, like I said, a really good step-in candidate that I don't think people are really worrying too much about the manager when there's a lot of other stuff that goes on every day with the Mets.
Yeah, well, let's just talk a little bit about the team itself, because it is an interesting club, and let's face it, they are in a rough division. You have the Braves won the division the last 2 years and have a fine team. I don't know if you read the papers or not, but the Nationals won the World Series last year. And Philadelphia, even though the Phillies are still looking for their first winning season since Ryan Howard collapsed in a heap at the end of the 2011 division series, they're still pretty talented. They have a good manager, and they're pretty stacked and look like they're ready to contend. You could be a team with a winning record in this division and finish fourth.
Yeah. I mean, that might have happened last year at the Phillies. I don't remember if they had a winning record or not, but I think
They didn't.
Okay. No. But, yeah, it's competitive. I think that the Mets might have the best puncher's chance, if you would, to actually take on the Braves if everything clicks. But there's just so many question marks when you're counting on a 36- or 37-year-old Robinson Cano and Diaz off the down year. So there's a lot of question marks with this Mets team where I feel like the floor can kind of drop out from under them if they're not careful.
So you have the best pitcher in the National League, at least the last couple of years, in DeGrom. You have a potential budding superstar in Rookie of the Year, Pete Alonso. You're going to have Stroman for a full season and hopefully a bounce-back year from Noah Syndergaard. I mean, you have the foundation of not only a good team, but a potentially star-studded team and a team that Met fans could really get behind. What's the mood there in terms of what expectations are and what they would consider to be a successful year?
I mean, I think that saying the Mets need to win the division is probably a little bit of a stretch, especially when you have the Braves, who I think are clearly the most talented team in the division. But I think if this Mets team doesn't get a wild card, it's going to be a big disappointment. You have Jacob deGrom coming off two Cy Young seasons, and they're really wasting that prime. So, like you said, there's a lot of talent. You have big X factors like the Yoenis Cespedes on the horizon that could make this team even better. So, like I said, there's a lot of things that can come together and actually give this Mets team a chance in the NL East. But if they miss out on the playoffs, again, it's going to be a major disappointment.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, especially because of – you know, the pieces that are already in place there. I mean, it just seems to me like this has to be they have to make the next turn. I mean, the fact that they had a winning record last year was a nice big step. And I think that this has to be a team that they got to be pulling in for a wild card.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it was the big second half last year. The biggest concern I have with this team is – well, it's twofold. For one, you have the loss of Zach Wheeler, who I think is a lot better than a lot of people think he is. He just especially in the second half, he was outstanding. So losing him is a big question mark. I don't know how good Rick Porcello really is at that point. And then I just don't know about who's actually going to be playing left field this year.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just right now, I'm just taking a look at the projected lineup of the Mets. I mean, you have, you know, McNeil obviously had a fine year last year. Alonso was spectacular. You could potentially have an outfield of J.D. Davis, Brandon Nimmo, and Michael Conforto, and Ahmed Rosario. It's short. I don't know Cano's current health situation, and Wilson Ramos and Cespedes could man at some point in their outfield. That's really a lineup that could break either way. I mean, if the players are healthy, that's actually not a bad lineup. But there's just so much that has to go their way that you got to wonder, should they dip into the farm? Should they take a flyer in Yasiel Puig? I mean, or you know, someone else who could get a gig? I mean, I don't know at this point. It seems like they're hoping that it's a glass half full situation for the offense there and that's assuming that McNeil and Alonso are both going to have excellent seasons again.
Yeah, it's funny because Birdie Van Wagenen came in, and last year one of his big quotes that gets thrown around a lot is he said, "We want to eliminate the ifs. The last regime relied on ifs too much," and then now he realizes, as he's part of this organization, that that's just kind of status quo. Because once again, it's if Cespedes is healthy, if J.D. Davis can actually play defense and remain healthy, if Brandon Nimmo can stay healthy and play center field when he's really more of a natural corner outfielder. So, and Cano too, another question mark. So it's a lot of ifs, but I think if that lineup actually does come together and is healthy, it is one of the better lineups in the National League.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, the starting rotation, at least on paper, as we mentioned, DeGrom, Syndergaard, Stroman, Mats, Porcello, is a really solid one. But I can't help but wonder, and this is me being, rooting for the Red Sox all these years, and Porcello was good one, you know, Cy Young Award winner one year, terrible the next, helped them win the World Series the next year, terrible the next. It was a really up and down type of performance, but I'm going to throw this out there. One of the best uses of Porcello that the Red Sox had, besides winning the Cy Young in 2016, which I frankly don't think he deserved, but who am I to argue? He obviously had a fine season. They've never given a Cy Young to someone who had a lousy season. Yeah. I thought that he was quite effective being used out of the bullpen in the postseason in 2018 for the Red Sox. And I can't help but wonder if the Mets are better off putting Porcello into the bullpen, maybe not as the closer, but maybe as that sort of super connector reliever, someone who comes in and gives you two innings one day, two innings 2 days later to connect from the starter to the closer, kind of the way that Francona had used Andrew Miller during his time in Cleveland, or the way that Bochy used Tim Lincecum in the postseason in 2012 very effectively. I think he could be the type of pitcher that gives the Mets some depth in their bullpen if they choose to use him that way.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I didn't realize, now that you say that, I do remember some of those postseason outings, but right now there was a story that came out this week where the Mets are considering using Steven Matz and Michael Wacha in some type of a matchup role in that fifth spot of the rotation, where they would select the starter based on matchups, and then they would be mix and matching between openers and all of that to say that Rick Porcello is apparently guaranteed a spot in this rotation because his name was not mentioned, which to me doesn't make a lot of sense. I just did a podcast that I think was today's or yesterday's where I broke down the numbers, and Steven Matz is by far the better pitcher. Yeah. So I don't understand the Mets thinking, other than the $10 million, as to why Porcello is just getting, you know, put right into the rotation. But if he has that track record, that could be the best way to go.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, yeah, you're paying him all that money. That doesn't mean you have to put him at the start of the game. If he can give the team, I don't know if they're going to do the starter route or the opener route or whatever in the rotation. They haven't consulted me on that. I've my office door is open, but I feel that if you get 100-some-odd innings out of Porcello, they don't have to be at the beginning of the game. I think that the depth of the pitching staff is, I'd forgotten even about Michael Wacha. I guess I was just, I always think of him as such a health risk. It's difficult for me to necessarily take him that seriously in the rotation. But if you have Matz as your four and Wacha as your five, and Porcello is being the connective tissue in that bullpen, I think pitching depth, we all know, is the key to getting into the postseason. And one of those starters, they're not going to have a fifth starter if they get to the postseason. So you'd have Porcello and either Matz or Wacha out of the pen. All of a sudden, your pitching staff is even a little deeper at that point. I say you go with it. It doesn't matter if you pay him $10 million. Pay him $10 million to help win a championship. Yeah. And if that's his best role, then isn't that better than if you're paying him $10 million and he's being an ineffective starter? I never understood the whole, well, we can't put him in the bullpen because we're paying him X amount of money. If you're winning games, you can make that money back. That will never make sense to me. And that's just my – I remember Porcello being very effective out of the pen in 2018, and I think that could be a good role and could help them win a title if that is indeed the Mets' goal this year.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I definitely agree that salary shouldn't dictate things like that. It's more how this organization kind of just continues to operate. But the other thing I have a problem with this new plan about Wacha and Matz is you have two pitchers, like you mentioned, with an extensive injury history, and I don't like them, you know, not having a set schedule. So if they all break camp healthy and you have someone who's been as durable as Porcello who can – swing back and forth whenever injuries pop up, that does make a lot more sense to me.
Yeah. I would love to see the Mets do well, not just because my cousin Dave is a rabid Mets fan. There's a likability, and there's also, this is a concept that people who don't live in New York have a hard time understanding, because I think people paint New York sports fans with the brush of the Yankees and to a lesser degree the Giants in football. You could be a truly tortured New York sports fan. Absolutely tortured. If you're a Jet fan, I told you about what I call the rule of seven. The rule of seven is you don't really start following a team until you are 7 years old. And so anything that happened before that, like if I was born in 1972, if I were an A's fan, I couldn't say, oh, I had a great time watching the 72 World Series. No, I was too young to remember that. Then none of those count for your fandom until you are 7 years old. And if you are a 41-year-old Met fan, you don't really have a memory of your team winning the World Series. 41 years old or younger. And if you're a Jet fan, if you're, 57 years old or younger, you have no memory of your team winning a Super Bowl. And the Knicks are close to that, and, you know, a lot of the hockey teams. So if you have the wrong combination of sports teams as a New York fan, that's deadly. That's a real – there's a lot of angst going on. And there's been a lot of Met pain since Marty Barrett struck out to end the 1986 World Series. And I can't help but think that this would be a Mets championship in their new stadium with enough players from that 2015 team still hanging around, that this would be an unbelievably great moment for this franchise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm 24, so
you don't remember 86.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, my first real team was the 2006 Mets with the Beltran striking out to Wainwright and all of that. And then, of course, 2015, where the Royals got him. So I don't have any good memories there. Luckily, my dad's a New York Giants fan, So I went that route. So I got a couple Super Bowls to hang my hat on. But yeah, it can be really rough. And the Mets fans are starved for this. They really get up for the team once they're good. Even when they're bad, they're watching. So it would be a really big story to see the Mets actually pull this thing off. We'll just see what happens.
Yeah. Well, look at. I think they're a likable bunch, and I hope they do win. I hope they do well. Let me put it that way. And I hope it's an exciting year. I think baseball is better when you have a good Mets team. You know, they've been enough butts of jokes over the years. I'd like to see them do quite well. All right, hey, Ryan, tell people where people can listen to you.
I'll just search Locked On Mets wherever you get your podcast, and you can find me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan.
All right, well, look it. Listen to Locked On Mets. It should be an interesting season. It should be fun. Last year was fun, but let's have it be more interesting this year. You can follow us at LockedOnMLB_net, and you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at LockedOnMLB. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. Talking Mets with Locked On Baseball's Ryan Finkelstein. This has been Locked On MLB for the 27th day of February 2020. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.